We'd like to take the few minutes that we have to begin to respond back to some of the questions that the panelists received based on the initial conversation. And I'd like to start with Maria. And one of the most interesting questions that we received, and there were many, it says, I'm impressed by the focus. What are examples of successful interventions? How do we know they work? All interventions are not equal. What are the best bets? What are the unique ways to reach out to adolescent girls, Maria?
Okay, well, we did spend a lot of time talking about the challenges and the negative issues, but the positive side of this is incredible. The work that we've seen on the ground is phenomenal, and it really does work. One of the basic things that we've found is that girls need safe spaces. They need a safe place to go, to learn, to get health information, to play. Girls at that age also need to play and create social networks. So a safe space is a starting block for things that happen with girls. The second thing is that this economic piece can just not be underestimated. When we change the value equation and she's seen as valuable, we see amazing things happening. In the BRAC program in Bangladesh, there's been 400,000 girls who received microfinance, and that allowed them to have a little tomato field. We all know microfinance well. But what they did with that income, as girls and women do, they reinvest it. They use that to keep themselves in school and then to keep their siblings in school as well, or contribute to the family income. And what we see when that happens is the relationship with their fathers and brothers shifts, because all of a sudden she's seen as a valuable player. So of course she's valuable when she starts, but she isn't given that value. And changing that equation is very, very powerful in the household. The other thing that we find is actually working with men and boys to change those norms with girls, and some wonderful programs really address that dynamic very much at the core of how those are fundamental relationship issues that play out. We've done some wonderful work with many of you around savings, because savings are so essential for girls, because when something goes wrong, she needs something to depend on other than her body as the only asset that she has. And what we found with savings is that savings become a symbolic, for a girl, symbol of empowerment. It means she has something of her own, and she has an ability to help herself should something happen in her life. So some wonderful programs focus on savings. And then microinsurance as well. Sort of a very new area of work that we're just exploring, but finding linking the insurance to your girl maintaining, staying in school is very powerful. So there's some really innovative work that's going on, because they are a challenging group to reach. And I guess I just can't really emphasize enough this economic piece, getting into the equation and finding ways that in whatever work that you do. And then the last piece I would just love to emphasize, and there was a commitment made this morning with President Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, the World Bank, and ourselves. And what's so exciting about that commitment is that it's about institutional transformation. President Johnson Sirleaf, we met and we talked, and she's just amazing, as everyone who knows who meets her. And she very bluntly said, if I don't get adolescent girls in my country empowered, healthy, and educated, I am not going to succeed in creating a stable, successful country. And so I'm going to make them a national priority. And she put them as a she has made girls a national priority for that country, and she put it in the economic pillar to demonstrate the importance of that. And then when we started doing work with the World Bank and connecting the dots, what was really exciting is that the bank is now seeing the importance of doing this work. And so it's a collaboration. It's an unusual collaboration and pretty challenging, but we've made some great progress, and now we have other countries that are joining in that. So the idea that there's programs on the ground in the smallest, most important way, but then there's big institutional change that can occur. And what we're trying to do is connect these three circles, we like to call it, the program on the ground with this powerful communication, with then the mobilization of resources and attention. And others like the Novo Foundation have joined the work that we're doing, and it's just been an incredible dynamic, so hopefully we'll get a lot more. Sorry, I went on there. I got a little too excited. Sorry about that.
I don't think it's stop people when they're excited. We have three people who are going to get excited with their questions. So it should be on everybody's agenda, I think, correct, Benny? And our question is, Focus is on girl empowerment, but what efforts are being done to reach out to boys, family, and culture?
Thank you, Mary. I earlier mentioned that in our program we have forum for mothers and fathers. It's called Daughters Parents Forum, and the parents come to share their experiences and to ask questions to get to know what exactly we do. And beyond that, it's a three-year program for each girl from the time of registration. And part of the graduation requirement is that they have to go into a rural community for needs assessment study and educational program. And so we've had in the last 10 years, 10 communities, really deep rural communities that have been reached. And the rural community, each of these, what we do is to engage with the youth leaders, the women leaders, and the male leaders, and bring them together. And most of the traditional harmful practices have been stopped in those communities that we have reached. Because getting the discussion on with these young women who have been inspired and have become change agents has led to those communities seeing what the challenges to the health of the girls and women in those communities are, and they have created monitoring groups in the communities to ensure that those things aren't happening in those communities that we have reached so far. And we do this on a yearly basis. In addition, I also mentioned that because of the presence of our program, indeed, the young woman that is in charge of the presentation of the Girls Power Initiative program on TV has been confronted several times. Why are you carrying this kind of program? We can't get girls out there again. You can't deceive them. You know, that's the kind of thing that comes back to us. And so they are able to learn from the training tips, not just skills on how to overcome this, but how to interact and engage with their parents. And the parents themselves, what we have done, formerly any girl that came to register, we would accept the girl. But now, the parents have to bring them so that we are sure they are committed to the changes that will happen. So really, fathers and mothers, most often fathers, bring their daughters to get registered. It is us that say, I'm sorry, their resources cannot reach out. We have closed registration for this year. Sometimes, when we say that registration starts at 18, you find a family that brings three girls, and we look at the third one. This girl cannot be 10. Please, she will be 10 in the next 3 months. We just want her to be like those girls that we see on your television program. So it can change. And one of the challenges we had was from religious leaders. But 3 weeks ago, the Catholic Church, the biggest in the city where I live, invited us to give an educational program on sexual and reproductive health to girls in that community. And we have been invited by so many other communities and many other churches, but it was significant in terms of that of the Catholic Church, because that was one community that first did not accept what we were doing because they thought we were spoiling girls, and there were all kinds of misconceptions. But parents are the leaders now in, you know, giving information to the public through our TV program to encourage other parents. And now the government has adopted our program, and we are training teachers from government schools. And in the last 3 years, we have trained over 600 teachers in public schools to run the curriculum that we are engaging the young girls in our program. So
Thank
it can
you.
Happen.
It can happen. And Ashley, how do we make it happen? How do we facilitate that the environment is more enabling to girls' empowerment? The question refers to the family, mothers and fathers and boys.
My synapses are so stimulated right now. I'm about to pass out. There's so much that I want to say. The questions were really exciting and dynamic. We had a lot of debate about which ones to respond to. And What I would like to do to respond to this question is pull from examples of PSI programs around the world and aggregate them as a model for helping adolescent girls have a healthy transition. So, for example, it would include a youth drop-in center like Dushishozi in Rwanda, our youth drop-in centers throughout Latin America, which I have visited, which, as Maria very rightly noted, gives both girls and boys an opportunity to play, to have some relief. They're working very hard, 6 hours, 45 minutes, doing chores in Bangladesh, for example. And in Dushishozi, for example, when a child comes to the drop-in center, they register, and all of this is done by hand. It's very sweet. The logs are incredibly touching. A lot of times, they're not initially presenting because they want to access our services, reproductive health information, STI and HIV testing, safe drinking water information, hygiene and sanitation. They're coming to play. We have very limited supplies, but we have a football. We've got some crafts. They can do plays. One of our drop-in centers in Nairobi, for example, has some weightlifting equipment. And our Dushishozi in Rwanda is funded by the CDC, which I think is very interesting. And per child reached and sensitized, it's a very high cost. I mean, traditionally, we're $10 per person educated for an entire year. But this cost is higher because it's a holistic approach. But it's very valuable and it works. And inevitably, after they've come a few times, they start to trust the staff and they start to say, you know, gosh, this boy is approaching me or this man is approaching me or I've started to bleed and I'm really frightened. And they get that valuable, incredible information, which can truly change and save their lives. Another aspect that Nicholas Kristof writes about very powerfully on his blogs is the mother-in-law factor. So, for example, in an urban slum in Rajasthan, our interpersonal communicators literally go door to door because if they can get the keys to the kingdom through that mother-in-law, they can reach, our IPCs can reach, so many young women, the daughters-in-law, the daughters who are not yet married, etc. And through appropriate cultural means of reaching and respectfully winning over that mother-in-law, we get up, you know, we bring out the anatomical models, both male and female, and start educating women about how to prevent unintended pregnancy. Another aspect would be the mobile audio and video units, which go out to rural places where a lot of times there is no electricity, or if there is some electricity, there's no radio and TV and entertainment. And boy, do the villagers come out when they have this opportunity to be so entertained. A lot of times the DJ, if you will, is someone who's HIV positive or who's really come through incredible hard times and has been reached by an NGO, and they can provide this information in a way that's so dynamic. And that reaches, of course, both girls and boys. And we have a lot of outreach to boys, for example, the, you know, what is a real man? And this guy, Juanes, he's on Time's 100 Most Powerful People in the World list. He's the Beatles and Madonna rolled into one. He does incredible campaigns for us throughout Latin America about what it means to be a real man. So those are just a few examples. And, of course, the dream would be to have all of those combined approaches in one country. And that's my dream, and we're on our way to Ethiopia in February, hopefully with the Nike Foundation, and we've got really high hopes for what we can do. And then on top of those grassroots outreach, it needs the advocacy at the highest levels of government. The Minister of Health in the DRC, where I just visited, as well as the Minister of Gender, they didn't have reproductive health and family planning on their list, and they do now, thanks to what our country rep was able to do there, and the way she was able to capitalize on my visit.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I know Tom is going to have a hard job summarizing all these wonderful ideas.
Okay. The room did not disappoint. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cover a couple of the recurring themes that were generated at the table discussions. The first is to include boys and families in the equation. So bring girls in. Do not kick boys out. In the short term, to try to find ways to assist girls within their current cultural framework, and in the long term, to try to change social norms, since that is not something that happens overnight. To try to use technology, media, and the internet to connect girls and allow them to tell their stories. One very powerful platform we have is the very rapid diffusion of mobile technologies. Currently, there are over 3.3 billion mobile subscribers, and that number is projected to grow to $5 billion over the next couple of years. To develop an international and national curriculum, particularly around women's rights, sexuality, and business. Obviously, this is something that would have to be adopted and adapted locally, but certainly one could discuss the core concepts that would need to be covered in something like this. And to promote powerful role models in terms of politicians, community leaders, midwives, and world leaders as well. There were also a number of very specific ideas that people discussed. One was to have a Nobel Peace Summit focused on girls and to invite global leaders such as the people on the stage with us right now, but in addition to that, the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, and Oprah. So, Ashley, you're responsible for delivering Oprah, okay?
Father Tutu is easy. All right. You can deliver. I don't know about Oprah.
Okay. Maria, the next one is for you. To use the world attention on football, what we call soccer in the United States, the World Cup combined with Nike and other companies, and to use advertising to promote the girl issues in all countries. The notion of using conditional cast transfers to families as an incentive to keep girls in school. This was a program that was pioneered in Mexico, where there is a specific payment that is conditional on particular types of behavior, whether it's seeking prenatal care or keeping your children in school, and using that as a tool. There was an interest in having some sort of code of conduct, something like fair trade, the impact that fair trade is having in the coffee area around corporate fair treatment for girls and supporting investing in girls in local communities, particularly those firms that have global supply chains. And an idea that could have an impact in terms of awareness raising, particularly on the economic message that a number of our panelists referred to, and that is an international Bring Your Daughter to Work Day in all countries that would be sponsored by companies around the world. So there were many, many other really creative ideas that just, I hope, gives you a taste for some of the underlying issues that people talked about and then some of the specific next steps that we could take to address the challenges and opportunities that have been so eloquently discussed by our panelists. Thank you.
We have literally about 45 seconds each to be able to say something about these wonderful comments. Benish, we'll start with you. And I think I'm going to use my fan that I haven't had to use to tell you when you have to stop. Each of you. Not just, please.
Thank you very much for the opportunity again. I want to repeat, as I said before, it's actually very productive and economically also very key that investment be done on young women. We've seen it happen, even for young girls that were selling oranges on the street. Coming into Girls Power Initiative, learning skills, have been able to use those basic skills that they have learned to send themselves to school and be supported by their families. So it's important that working with girls should attract investment, which actually will bring out real great returns in terms of development in the world that we are seeing ahead. Thank you.
It works. Maria?
Three quick things. The first is a thank you. There's a lot of people who have worked on these issues tirelessly for years, and I see them in the audience, the International Women's Health Coalition, International Center for Research on Women, Popular, et cetera. There are many people who have tirelessly worked on these issues, and it's just the excitement now if we can get this issue of girls on the global agenda and drive real resources to them. We've got a real moment here to make that happen. And then the second is I just ask everyone to just do one thing. Just walk out of here and do just one thing. Commit to do one thing yourself, and that multiplier effect of all of you will be amazing. That's the girl effect. That's it.
Ashley, what can we say to our audience with these wonderful comments?
Well, I love the include boys and families in the equation because this is about inclusivity and a holistic healing. And I truly believe that the system that exploits and disregards girls is as abusive to boys and men as it is to girls and women. And also, I love the thing about technology, media, and the internet, because even in Goma in the DRC, which is so stunningly poor, there are mobile phones everywhere. And so using positive messaging, as, for example, we did in Cameroon, say Mavi. You know, it was for girls to say Mavi. That's a wonderful idea. And with regard to question 9, I think I would love to talk about human trafficking, and I would refer people to APNI App Worldwide and Ruchira Gupta, for example. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Well, one other thing. You know, not all organizations can't be all things to all people. So Women for Women International, for example, they're doing extraordinary work empowering women, but the women I met weren't sleeping under long-lasting insecticide-treated nets, and they weren't using modern contraceptives. So find your pig and fund it well. The dribbling doesn't work. Don't dribble dollars here and dribble dollars there. You know, leverage your core competency and throw lots of money at it.
Thank you. Thank you. I have the opportunity to do two wonderful things. And Donna Shalala is going to be with us now to present 3 commitments, which we're very much looking forward to hearing about. And just before we step down and she comes on stage, to thank each of our panelists, Maria, Bene, Ashley. It was wonderful. I learned a tremendous amount from working with you. Thank you, and thank all of you. And thank you to the Clean Globe Limit.
Folks, if you could please take your seats. We're going to have 3 very exciting commitments to announce. And here to do that is the president of the University of Miami and former Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. What a terrific panel. I learned a lot. Could I ask Adrienne Germain, the president of the International Women's Health Coalition, to come up? This commitment, which is called Securing Health and Human Rights for Girls, the International Women's Health Coalition, along with their local partners, including the Girls Power Initiative, is committing to providing 36 grants to 19 local organizations implementing health and education programs for adolescent girls in developing countries. They have a very strong track record, and they're going to provide technical and professional assistance to these 19 organizations to improve their organizational capacity. I can't think of a better organization. This commitment will positively affect the lives of more than 1 million people living in developing countries, directly impacting 12,000 girls and 4,500 boys. Adrienne, thank you. Point out, I was one of the original board members of the International Women's Health Coalition when they started some time ago. One of my favorite senators, Senator Bill Frist, the former United States Senator, Senate Majority Leader, and Charles Evans, President of the International Health Services Group. The commitment by Senator Frist and the International Health Services Group, the commitment name is Leadership Corps. Senator Frist, in partnership with the International Health Services Foundation, the American College of Healthcare Executives, and the American Public Health Association, and Tyler and Company, is committed to creating a leadership core for building management capacity in the underserved areas of the world. The leadership core will link seasoned healthcare executives with partner NGOs in developing countries to contribute to enhanced health services and better health outcomes. In its first year, the Leadership Corps will recruit 50 volunteers to serve 25 organizations in 10 communities in Kenya, reaching an estimated 250,000 citizens. And I want to say about Senator Frist, because many of you know him as a politician, many of us know him as a wonderful physician who spends part of every year actually practicing medicine in Africa, and he's a wonderful leader, and I'm pleased to present this to him and his colleagues. Merrill Lynch, represented by Claudia Kahn, Senior Vice President of Merrill Lynch. They're partners of the Worldwide Fistula Fund, WFF, which is, and the commitment name is Worldwide Fistula Fund Model Fistula Surgery and Training Center. And the commitment is to provide financial development support for WFF's construction and operation of the WFF Model Fistula Surgery and Training Center in Niger. It's $4.9 million over 5 years. And Merrill Lynch is committed to providing $250,000 for the construction of the Surgery and Training Center, and this will provide significant in-kind support, including senior executive leadership, to assist WFF in raising an additional $4.3 million required for the center's establishment and operation over the next 5 years. WFF is committed to providing quality medical care and surgical treatment free of charge to women and to support their social and economic reintegration into the community. Approximately 2,500 women will be served in the first 5 years, and they'll train 30 African and other doctors over 5 years and pioneer a replica model for community-based programs to prevent obstructed labor and help countless numbers of girls and women. This will be an exportable model center that can be replicated and adopted in other African and Asian countries. Please join me in congratulating Merrill Lynch. Of more assignments here. One of the things that we want to do this year is to make sure that we get progress reports. And for the first progress report in this working session, I'd like you to welcome Beth Seidenberg, who is a partner in Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers. She's a distinguished physician who was formerly the Senior Vice President of Global Development and the Chief Medical Officer at Amgen, and has played a number of roles in the biotech industry. And she's going to give us a report on an earlier commitment.
Well, thank you very much. I think I'm the last person or one of the last people, but it really is an honor to be here. Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Tom, for inviting us to give an update. Last year at the Clinton Global Initiative, the partners at Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers committed $135 million to be invested in emerging companies that are working on public health initiatives, particularly around emerging infectious diseases. And our goal is to be a catalyst for action. And we do that by taking game-changing ideas and entrepreneurs who are focused on daring to take those ideas and building them into long-lasting companies, and we bring the financial resources to bear to help them do that. And we always ask our questions every morning about what if we didn't fund Genentech? how many people would have died of cancer. What if we didn't fund Google? Think about everybody with their BlackBerries. What would we do without all of this information at our fingertips? Now we're asking, what if we do not fund technology that will allow us to treat emerging infectious diseases around the world? I'm pleased to report that we've invested over $100 million in companies that are working on treatments and preventions, both vaccines and therapeutic agents, in addition to manufacturing facilities and novel technologies that will help people, for example, new ventilators in the developing world that can be used by a non-trained person. We've been pleased that we've had government match of those funds for over $150 million, and other venture capitalists are joining the effort. And we now believe that we can serve the double bottom line. We know that if we put our money to work, all of our network and all of our power, we will be able to do good around the world and still return these investments. So this year, we're going to make another commitment with two of our companies who are stepping up to the plate, and you'll hear more about that on Friday, to provide inexpensive manufacturing facilities for vaccines around the world. And those two companies are Novavax and Accelerex. And I'd also like to thank our partners from PATH who have helped us with these commitments. Thank you so much.
And a couple of shout-outs. I'd like to recognize Cecilia Flores Obanda from Vaseon Forum Foundation, who's made a commitment towards the protection against human trafficking in the Philippines. Is Cecilia here? There you are. Over the next 2 years, the foundation will protect and empower 3,000 women and children aged 12 to 27 who are victims of and vulnerable to human trafficking. This commitment will mobilize resources to increase public awareness to fight human trafficking and build the capacity of local officials to do so on all fronts. Take another bow, Cecilia. Thank you very much. And I'd like to recognize the Girl Power Initiative. Bene Madunago from the Girls Power Initiative, who's made a commitment to empower adolescent girls from 10 to 18 in Nigeria to live healthy lives and achieve their full potential by providing gender-sensitive education and leadership and life management skills, human rights, sexuality, and reproductive health. And through this commitment, the Girl Power Initiative expects to reach 700,000 youth each year in each of its four centers, and in school-based activities, 800,000 youth through its television show and a large number of parents and teachers. Where is Benet? There you are. There you are. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, please join me in giving another round of applause to our fantastic panelists and everyone who made a commitment. So that concludes the session. I wanted to encourage you to attend the breakfasts. I know they're early at 7:45. It's going to be right here. The members chose the topics, so I hope you're willing to set your alarm a little earlier and participate in the breakfasts. And I'll see you back here at 10:45 for our working group session on the health workforce. Thank you very much.